We're about to begin a new sugya that is not really a Bava Kama sugya per se. It's a more of a, almost more of a Yoredeya, Halach Lamaisa sugya, but it has its roots in what the Rishonim write in our sugya Bava Kama Dav Yud. So we're going to pick it up from here and then branch out quickly into some very, very potentially real Shalas Lamaisa. So just the background of the sugya that gets everything started is really a combination of two drushas. Both of them appear in the context of Bor. One is a drush that we spent the last couple of days on, the Vahamei Cielo. The Torah tells us that the only time the Baal HaBor is obligated to pay is only if the animal that fell into the boar is still worth something. I mean, the owner can still do something with it. Vahamei Cielo, he can't eat it, obviously, it's an avela, but he can feed it to the dogs, he can sell it to the goyim, etc. So then and only then do we say Baal HaBor Yishalem, if Vahamei Cielo. This is in contrast to a case such as Psuli HaMugdoshin, the animal that had a mum and then was redeemed and fell into the boar. So as we spoke in great length the last couple of days, there would not be a chiyuv boar because the owner of the animal can't do anything with it. You can't feed it to the dogs anymore. We spoke about feeding to the goyim, etc. So it's basically called ein hamei shelo. So that's din number one, keep in the back of burner. Din number two is also a drasha concerning boar we've spoken about several times in the past, and that is shor v'lo adam, chabor v'lo kelim. The Torah tells us that there are two examples that are given of animals that fall into the pit. Why does the Torah have to single out two different examples? The Torah should have said the nafal, shor, behema, something. Why shor o chamor? So the Torah Shabbat Peh teaches us that each one of these words is coming to exclude something else. Shor teaches us v'lo adam, that if a person falls into the boar and gets killed, the Baal HaBor does not have to pay. And chamor teaches me that if dishes break in the boar, utensils break in the boar, then once again the Baal HaBor doesn't have to pay. So we're going to now focus on that drush of shor v'lo adam. The Gemara says that drush of shor v'lo adam actually only applies when the person dies. If the person gets hurt, then you do have to pay. But if I dig a deep pit, somebody falls in and dies. So again, what's going to happen to the Shemayim is another story, but in terms of paying dollars and cents, Baal HaBor Yishalem doesn't apply. Shor v'lo adam. That's the halacha. Kach nemar halacha shor v'lo adam. So let's now combine those two halachas for a moment. And on the one hand, the only time the obligation of paying for boar kicks in is only if it's hamesi elo, has to the dead body of the animal has to belong to the person to be able to be usage, to be able to be permitted to be used. And in addition, there's a p'tur of shor v'lo adam. Come all the Rishonim involved with the following question. Why do I need a pasuk to tell me shor v'lo adam? If not for that gezeras hakosav, I would have said, I'm chayav to pay. Wait a second. He has to be shown him. It's yotza adam she'ena mei shalo. When the world is the person, or in this case, the Yorshim, whoever's supposed to supposedly get paid, what in the world are they going to do with the dead body? It's a dead body of a human being. And we have a rule called the meis adam is asabahano. A dead body, a human dead body, is asabahano. You're not permitted to derive benefit from. So since you're not permitted to derive benefit, it's anyway covered by the tour of, believe it or not, psuli abugdashin. A dead person is the halachic equivalent of psuli hamugdashim. Sounds like a very bizarre statement, but for our purposes, yeah, I think everyone understands what I mean. Just as psuli hamugdashim is also by now, you can't feed it to the dogs, therefore there's no obligation to pay for the boar, so too the dead person, there's no permissibility to feed to the dogs, therefore it would be also by now, and therefore there would be no chiv boar. Why do I need a special pasuk shor v'lo adam? So why did the Rav Hashem tell Moshe Rabbeinu shor v'lo adam? Anybody could have figured that out. Once I know the sugya of last week of psuli hamugdashim, I could have figured it out on my own. So this is where the sugya begins, and Tosfos already poses this question. And the basic goal of the Rishonim is to almost find a loophole, so to speak, to find the case, to find the strange scenario where the Isser HaNoah somehow wouldn't apply. It's a person, but somehow, this person is not a person that's Asav HaNoah after he dies. And therefore, Al Zeh Nemar, that's why you needed the additional component of Shor V'lo Adam. So Tosfos, on our Sugya Daf Yud Amud Aleph, on the first of the Imam Kamos, so Tosfos takes an attempt to answer this question. So it's the third line in the Tosfos. The middle of the line of Vlav Achilo Kashim, Yidei Lamai Defrishis Liel. Tosfos makes reference to something that he said earlier. The Shor V'lo Adam Itzterich, why in the world do I need a Pasuk, Shor V'lo Adam? Itzterich Le'ever Ulenachri Hakonu Yisrael. It's coming to teach me that even if the person who died is not a regular Jewish person, it's an Eved. Now, we're going to translate Eved as Nevekanani to be determined whether that's the correct shot. Or a Nachri Hakonu Yisrael. or a non-Jew who is working for a Jew, acquired by a Jew. Again, we're being very, very vague in our terminology right now, because it sounds like, isn't that the same as an Eved Kenani? So not yet, but again, that's going to be almost like the second half of the sugya. But the bottom line is, all of these above categories, the Eved, the Nochri, Shenafal Abor, that fell into the pit, Tiahu Shareb Hanoh, because it happens to be that these types of bodies are in fact permissible Bahanoh, and therefore they wouldn't have been covered by the drasha of Amesi Elo, and therefore it is necessary for the additional drasha of Shor V'lo Adam. So we can breathe a sigh of relief. We found a case, or two cases. We shouldn't breathe too quickly because we're not even sure what the cases are. Yeah. But one thing seems to be pretty clear, the theme that Tosfos seems to be expressing, is that the Isser Hanoh of Amesi seems to only apply to a Jewish mace. That's what Tosfos seems to be saying. And because of that phenomenon in Hilchas Isra and Abba Mace, therefore we could use this almost as the loophole to find the case of a mace Adam that in fact is still Mutabana. So of course Tosfos' solution of a comment of Yud is hinging on this fact. If this fact is not true, then Tosfos' whole teretz is not correct. So is it true? Is it not true? Do we have any sources for this? Why should we say such a thing? Is this really how we paskin? So believe it or not, the ramifications of this shaila are many, many, many times over. This shaila is going to impact upon doctors studying medicine, using dead bodies to study medicine. This shaila is going to impact potentially on some aspects of transplants. This shaila is going to impact on, can you go to I don't know if they still have the exhibit bodies. They used to have this exhibit in one of the museums downtown about looking at dead bodies and studying different parts about dead bodies. Are you permitted to go to those exhibits? This shaila impacted on a very, very strange business that some Jews found themselves in the 1700s. It was called the mummy business. Apparently that when they started first discovering some of the mummies, some digging up some of the mummies in Egypt, so some of the museums in Europe wanted to get their hands on some of these mummies. So the Klai Yisrael, somehow the Jewish people got themselves into this business. It's a strange business, but it's a little bit of, listen, you got to make a few dollars here and there. So you had the Jews who are now involved in the mummy business. So the shadow was presented to the Mishnah Melech. Is that called being Nana for Minister Hanoh? You're allowed to deal in mummies. So you had many, many, many different shalas, both ancient and contemporary and shalas, that all depend upon this one fundamental question. When we say that a mace is also by God, does that include a non-Jewish mace or not? So one of the primary sources is this Tosfos. So all of a sudden in your day, and the simon about Hilchos Israel and Abed Amace, so this Tosfos became very, very popular. Because Tosfos used this kula, so to speak, as the potential solution to the problem why you need the extra pasuk shovel adam. So we have to test this theory of Tosfos and see where does it come from, what do the other Rishonim say about it. So let's take a look. So the sugi begins actually in the third of the Ramakamas with how do you know that a mace is also in the first place? So the source for mace adam actually is part of a whole series of different tisurim, which starts with the following discussion. Yayim and Nolan, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Chavtes, is discussing how do you know that if a non-Jew pours, or a Jew for that matter, pours wine for an idol, how do you know that that wine becomes usur? How do you know you're not allowed to use that wine? Now, the background of this Mishnah, the Mishnah is really talking almost like twofold. There's a din min haTorah that if wine was actually poured for an idol, it becomes asur b'hanah. You're not allowed to use it midaraisa. Then there's a din min derabanan that if wine was even touched by a non-Jew, we're concerned that maybe in the back of his mind he was planning on pouring it to the idol. So Chazal prohibited that also midarabanan. That's what we call stam yenam. So the real din deraisa is if the wine was actually poured. The din derabanan is if the wine was even just touched, that would also be a problem. So here the Gemara is addressing the din deraisa. How do you know that if the wine was mamish poured for an idol, it becomes treif? So yayim and olam. So am rabba avu amakra. Asher chelev zvachem o yochelu yishtu yein nesicham. It's a pasuk in Parshas Ha'azinu, where the Torah is speaking about people who are worshipping idols, and they're worshipping idols, they're offering chelev zvachem, they're offering the chelev, the fats, as sacrifices to the idols, and they're pouring the wine for the idols to drink, so to speak. So the Torah Rabbeinu explains to us, "Mazevach asabano, af yayinami asabano." Since the Torah compares the sacrifices brought to the idols to the wine brought to the idols, just as the sacrifice, everybody knows the sacrifice. Somebody brings an animal to an idol for sure, you're not allowed to derive benefit from that. So to the wine that was offered, also one cannot derive benefit. So the Gemara questions, really? Zevach kufa b'nolan. And how do you know that you're not allowed to derive benefit from the sacrifice itself? If you're building on the isser of the Zevach, you're comparing the Yayin to the Zevach, what's the source of Zevach? So here the Gemara quotes, it seems to be a very, very strange pasuk. Tichsiv v'yitzamdu l'bal pa'or v'yochu zivchei mesim. The pasuk describes that the people offered things to the, they got together to worship the Baal Pa'or, one of the Avodah Zarahs back in the Sefer Bamidbar, v'yochlu zivchei mesim. And the pasuk describes that the sacrifice that they ate, the meat that they ate, was called zivchei mesim. That's the phrase that's used to describe things that are brought for Avodah Zarah, zivchei mesim. So ma meis asabana, av zivch nami asabana. So we have a hekesh, we have a comparison. Since sacrifices to idols are called zivchei mesim, just as everybody knows that you're not allowed to derive benefit from a mace, from a dead body, so too you're not allowed to derive benefit from a zevach that was brought to an idol as well. Now, what's a little bit difficult, very difficult about this pasuk, it's something about happens not to be a pasuk in Chumash. It happens to be a pasuk in Tehillim, which is, becomes very, very problematic because we seem to be discussing Dinim in HaTorah here. We're looking for a source that the wine is off limits mid Araisa, and we're saying, well, of course it's off limits mid HaTorah because the wine is compared to sacrifice, which is compared to Basim, and Ayin Shom, the pasuk is from Tehillim. Tehillim? The Hillim is going to serve as a source for this and the Arise. That sounds very, very strange. So here we either fall back on one of two options. The Gemara says this several places. Sometimes the Gemara will quote a pasuk from Navi to or Navi or Ksuvim as a source for a Din Min HaTorah. So the Gemara itself will ask, wait a second, you can't learn a Din D'Araisa from a pasuk in Navi or Ksuvim. The Gemara says, you're right, it must have been a halacha of Moshe B'Sinai. And this pasuk is being brought just as an asmachta b'yamah, just as a way to remember it. But the real source is emes, the source is halacha Moshe Mesina. The Gemara does that sometimes, so maybe that's what's going on here also. So the Rambam in Uchaz Avodah Zarah has a little bit of a different twist here. The Rambam writes that how do you know that you're not allowed to derive benefit from idols, from sacrifices brought to idols? How do you know you're not allowed to derive benefit from anything to do with idols? So the Rambam says, how do you know? It says in the Chumash, it says, Losavi su'eva b'secha. It says, the Torah says multiple places that you're not allowed to derive benefit from idols themselves. So if somebody builds an idol, that idol is asa b'hano. So comes around and says, these psukim are just simply telling me that even though the sacrifice is not the pestle itself, it's not the idol proper, the wine is not the idol proper, this pasuk is being megala to me, this pasuk is revealing to me, that's also called a shtichel avodah zarah. It means there's a din min haTorah that avdavah shel avodah zarah is asa b'hano. What's called the davar shel avodah zarah? So I would have thought, the cheftza for the avodah zarah, only the idol proper, that's the avodah zarah. The God itself, that's the avodah zarah. So kamash b'lon, all these psukim, no, that all of the above are also called the avodah zarah. The psukim would just be megala to me what the meaning of the original pasuk in Chumash is really all about. So according to the Rambam, it's not like it's a new din that a zevach of an idol is asur. No, it's no new din that wine is asur. It's part of the old pre-existing din min haTorah. Anything and everything related to avodah zarah is asur. And now the pasuk is just revealing to me what's included in that relationship. So no matter how you slice it, the bottom line is that the wine that was poured to the idol is asur. No, the animal that was sacrificed to the idol is asur. No. How does all of this start from? It all starts from a mace. Just as a mace is asabana, so to all the above are asabana. So of course this pushes the question back a step. Umeis gufe minolan. And how do you know that a dead body is asabana? As a sham sham egla rufa. At least we're back in Chumash. There's a gzeri shava. The pasuk says sham, ksiv hachav tamas sham Miriam. It says that Miriam died. The Torah says that when you find the body, you're not sure who killed the person, so then you have to bring an egla arufa. And the Torah says about an egla arufa, if you are for sham, it uses the word sham also. So just as an egla arufa is prohibited to derive benefit from, so too a dead body is prohibited. Of course, the next question is going to be, and how do you know an egla, finally the sukkah is going to end, how do you know an egla arufa is asabana? Amid Rabbiyane kapar ksiba kekotchim. Because the Torah says, kapar liyamcha Yisrael, kapar is a loshen kapara, just as a korban is asabana. That we already know, the doesn't ask that we know, Baruch Hashem, we know, even though, interestingly enough, we know it, but the Rishonim have a three of machlokas what the answer is, but the Gemara never goes down that route. So a korban is also about no. So let's see if we can remember the different stages of the gezer shava. The korban is also about no. Therefore, the egel aruf was also about no. Therefore, the beis adam is also about no. Therefore, the zevach is also about no. Therefore, the yayin nesach is also about no. Five-way drasha, but at least we covered all our bases. The one, of course, that's most important for us now is the beis adam. So we derive from this pasuk that it makes other mazasar. So that, of course, gets the ball rolling in terms of that question. But wait, what was the example that the Torah gave about a makes other? The Torah spoke about the Tamash Shamiriam. So this always gets very, very tricky. But the Torah wants to present us a din, and the Torah uses a model. So the Torah singles out the Tamash Shamiriam as the model for the Isser Hanover makes Adam. What do we do with this model? Do we take this model literally? Only somebody who is similar to Miriam was, well, the halachic characteristics of Miriam is also bana. Well, no, Miriam was an example. It was just an example of a dead body, but it could have been any other person as well. Whenever we pick up on characteristics and we say we're going to focus in on very, very specific characteristics, it also gets very, very tricky because you have to figure out, well, which characteristics are important and which are not important. Miriam had a lot of characteristics. She was a woman. She knew how to sing. She knew how to dance. She was a Nevi'ah. She had a brother's name was Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, which characteristics are we going to focus on? We're going to say the only time you're awesome on us is if your name is Miriam and you know how to sing and your brother's name is Moshe. I mean, that sounds pretty silly. So even if you're going to focus on characteristics, you have to make sure you highlight the correct, the accurate characteristics. So comes Tosus and seems to highlight the fact that she was Jewish. That's important. The difference whether she was a man or a woman or had a brother named Moshe or not, that was not trivial. Those are irrelevant. But the fact that she was Jewish, we already know there are different dinim. Jews have certain dinim, goyim have other dinim. Jews are chayvim mitzvahs, goyim are not chayvim mitzvahs, Jews can create kedushin, goyim can't create kedushin. There are a lot of differences between them. So Tosfos is suggesting that maybe this is one of the differences, that the Tamash of Miriam, this is the source for the Yisrael of a mace, maybe this is limited only to a body that's kedushas Yisrael to it. And others who would disagree with us would say, like, Mechateza, like, why should you say that? Like, who told you to dash the butt? The Gemara doesn't say that the drush is limited in that sense. So Tosus is really, really going out on a limb. Tosus is really, really being mechadish. That's a tremendous skula that a mace akum is permissible b'hana. But again, we appreciate why Tosus is saying it. Tosus is using this to solve the problem of bor in our sugya. But alpha b'chein, it's still quite a chiddush. What do the other Rishonim have to say about this? So to see the weighing of the other Rishonim, we have to take a little bit of a background. We have to learn a not identical sugya, but related sugya, and eventually we'll come back to see what other Rishonim have to say about this. We're going to pick it up in the sixth of the Rambam, comes with the Rambam. So the Rambam in Hilchos Machlokes Asuros by Beis and Lach Gimel is addressing not the most pleasant topic, but the topic in halacha, I guess for lack of a better term, if you want to call it cannibalism in halacha, means what exactly are the ramifications of eating Basar Adam. Again, nobody's advocating this, nobody's suggesting it, but just in terms of pure kashrus, is this a violation of the rules of kashrus or not? So the Rambam walks a very, very fine line in terms of that. So the Rambam, in Hilchos Machlokes Asuros Perek Beis Lecha Gimel, sixth of Rambam comes, the Rambam writes as follows, Ha'adam, afa pi shenema bova hi Adam lenefesh chaya, the Torah does call a human being a nefesh chaya. He, in a certain sense, is part of the animal kingdom. Now, why is the Rambam introducing with that phrase? Because the Torah gives us rules that govern the eating of behemoth and chayos. So, zosa chaya shetochelu. So, the Torah introduces the Pasha of Kashrus and the end of Pasha Shmini by saying the following halachas govern anything and everything that's a nefesh chaya. So I would have thought, oh, an adam is a nefesh chaya. So we have to look at Hilchos Kashrus to discuss the status of an adam as well. We say that, and we say that Tzilas HaDerech, so we ask the Rish Baruch to save us from the Chayos Ros. So, question is, what does it mean exactly, Chayos Ros? So the olden days, that meant, you were traveling, is a lion going to attack you? Who knows what? So I have two things in mind when I say Chayos Ros. Number one, deer. Deer are not, we wouldn't want to call them a Chaya Ra'a. On the other hand, when they're about to hit your car, they become a Chaya Ra'a. So you have to have in mind the Chayos Ros. And by here are the nefesh chaya from the people, the two-legged creatures are also sometimes chayas rose. So here the Rambam introduces by saying that afal bisha never b'avir am nefesh chaya, eino bechlal mine chaya balas parsa lefika chena below sase. Nevertheless, a human being, a chaya he is, but he doesn't have a hoof, and he doesn't have. We can't discuss whether he has a split hoof or not split hoof, because he doesn't have a hoof. He has a foot. It's a different biological. it's different biologically than a hoof. So therefore, the Rambam says that we can't even begin to discuss whether, ooh, does a person have split hooves? Does he not have split hooves? Is he a chazer? Is he a gomel? Is he a short? It's a moot conversation because he's not in that parashah altogether. Therefore, the Fikach Edebelo says that. Therefore, the Torah doesn't even address an issa to him. However, what does that mean? If a person eats meat from a person, or the chelev of a person, whether he eats from a live person or from a dead person, you cannot give a malchus. Again, the Rambam's not recommending it, but you can't give a malchus for eating treif of food, for eating non-kosher species, because a human being is not really in the parasha altogether. Aval, now the Rambam turns around and says, nevertheless, don't think it's mutter. Also be'esei, if you eat human flesh, that's a violation of an iser essay of kashrus. What's the kashrus? Shere mona kos of shivas mirei chaya, v'rama behen zosa chaya shetochelu, hakol shul chutz v'yad lo sochelu. The Torah says there are three domesticated animals you can eat, shor, sechzim, and seizim, and there are seven wild animals, non-domesticated animals you can eat. Ayal, tzviv, yachmor, akobu, yisho, ova, zomer. There are seven animals you can eat. So any nefesh chaya that's not one of those seven, and obviously not a domesticated, not one of the three domesticated ones, is automatically not kosher, but not a lav. There's no lav. You're not chayav malchus for eating. If you find somehow some kind of a nefesh chaya that's not included in the lav, and it's not one of the seven biggies, therefore it's also to eat, for lav of b'b'chol asay. If a person does something they're not allowed to do because the Torah says aloshon asay, it's a violation in the Torah, it's an issur d'oraisa, but it's not a lav, and therefore you don't get malchus for it. So the Rambam writes, almost a tightrope. So if you ask the Rambam, is human flesh kosher or not? So the Rambam would answer, it depends by what your definition of kosher is. Is it like eating chazir? No. Are you chayav malchus for eating it? No. On the other hand, is it permissible to eat in terms of ichus kashrus? No. But the nature of the issur is in issur asay. So this is the famous sheet of the Rambam in ichus b'chol susurus. So comes the Ramban in the seventh of the Maror Makomos and raises a question of this. The Ramban, we're going to pick up the Ramban in the middle of his attack against the Rambam. It's the first one, the line is Gam Kein Ba'asei. About six lines down. Says the Ramban, it's a Ramban that appears both in Maseches Ksubis and to a certain degree in his parish and Chumash. A little bit of a shorter, it appears in Pasha Shemini, but the little longer part for us in Maseches Ksubis. So the Ramban asks, Sukla Godalu, Shekola Yotzim in Asur Asur. We have a rule in Uchus Kashrus, those are learning Maseches Bechorus, just had a couple of weeks ago, there's an absolute rule in Uchus Kashrus. If you have an animal that itself is Asur, anything that comes out of a non-kosher animal is automatically not kosher. It's for this reason that pig's milk is asur. It's for this reason that camel's milk is asur. It's for this reason that let's say a tray for birds' eggs are asur. Anything that emanated from a non-kosher source is included in this rule called yotzmin asur asur. Now comes the Rabban and says, therefore, umidika'ama b'dam b'chala v'filu mitzvahs prosh einbo shema mina af apostle mutter. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Ksubis that technically speaking, milk of a human being is kosher, and technically speaking, even blood of a human being is kosher. There's a special din midrabanan that if you see the blood of a person, so let's say you're eating something and some blood got on your piece of bread, so you're not supposed to eat that piece of bread, not supposed to eat that blood. That's a din midrabanan al tzmar sign. It looks bad. If somebody sees you eating blood, you never know, they think maybe you're drinking animal's blood or something. But if nobody can see what's going on, let's say the blood is inside your mouth, a person cuts their mouth and they know that their mouth is bleeding, so they're allowed to, so they're not mechuv to start spitting out the blood, they could just swallow the blood, doesn't matter. Why? Nobody sees it anyway. So the Marisayan was never instituted because blood, human blood, is really not treif, it's really kosher. So the Gemara says beferish that human milk was kosher and human blood is kosher. So how could that be? Asks the Ramban. If the blood is kosher and the milk is kosher, that must be a proof positive that the meat itself is kosher, that the person himself is kosher. If the Rambam is right that human flesh is off limits in terms of because kashrus, albeit a lower level, it's an iser essay, so then why shouldn't all human milk be usher as that iser essay as well? Why shouldn't all human blood be also because of that as well? Why don't we label it as called a yotzi and an osur also? That's the Ramban's two kashas against the Rambam. Says the Ramban, mitoch hachomer of these two kashas, because of these two powerful questions, the Rambam's theory is not correct. That Besar Adam is Taka Natref. There's nothing in Hilchos Machos, there's nothing in Hilchos Kashrus that prevents you from eating Besar Adam. Then the Ramban's about to begin to go down the path of what happens in the din of Mace and Miriam. That's going to, of course, set the stage for Ash. So again, that's why we're recording this Ramban right now. But let's just, before we get to that, just stop for a second and analyze what the Ramban asked against the Rambam and perhaps how the Rambam would solve that problem. So again, the Rambam starts off by saying, Besar Adam is Treif. Not treif to the extent of Malchus, but it's treif. It's part of the parasha of Shemini, a part of the parasha of Machalos Asuras. Ask the Ramban, if so, what happened to Kol Yotzeh min Asur Asur? So the Magid Mishnah, to defend this Rambam, says, in the stomach the Rambam must hold, that rule of Kol Yotzeh min Asur Asur only applies to Lavim, doesn't apply to Aseis. Something that's only Asur B'Torah Sasei was not subject to that Klal in Maseches Bechoros, and that must be the solution to the dilemma, to the problem of the Ramban. It sounds almost like Sisrei Torah, like some deep dark secret. Like if you really believe Kol Yotzeh Asur Asur, so like why should you arbitrarily distinguish? What's the difference? I mean, I'm well aware of the fact there's a difference. One gets Machas, one doesn't get Machas, but why is that difference relevant? Why should it be that if the Isser is an Isser, Malchus, that carries with it Kol Yotzeh Asur Asur. If the Isser is only an Isser Essay, so then we can look the other way in the Yotzeh. The only way to defend the Rambam based on the Smach Mishnah, what's the logic, what's the rationale behind this distinction? So, l'chora, the answer to this question touches on a fundamental question. What does this mean, Kol Yotzeh min Asur Asur? What do those words mean? So we know the Mishnah, the Gemara in Becharis, gives us a few examples. One example being the milk that comes from a non-kosher animal. The other being an egg that comes from a non-kosher bird. So there's a major machlekes that we've shown him just what that is to be. What's the nature, what the ramifications of this halach of Kol Yotzeh min Asur Asur? The machlekes begins with the machlekes Tosfos and the Rambam about what if a person goes ahead and eats the egg from the treif bird. The person goes ahead and drinks the chazah, drinks the pig's milk. What happens to him at that point? So there's Machlekes Tosfos in the Rambam, what is he punished with? So Tosfos writes this in his Chulin Daf Samach Dalet, he's Chayav Malchus. It's mamash tantamount to eating chazer. It's like tantamount to eating a treif, a bird. If you eat Kol Yotzeh min Asur, Tosfos took the Mishnah very seriously. Kol Yotzeh min Asur Asur, it's the same as eating the treif item itself, Yechayav Malchus. And the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam, Nuchas Bechos Asuras, writes, no, it's Asur, I'm not questioning. The Rambam says it's an Issa Gom, it's an Issa D'Araisa, no question about it. But to say that Yechayah Malchus is not Yechayah Malchus. And the Rambam actually gives you a model. He says, just because something is awesome in a Torah doesn't always translate to mean that Yechayah Malchus on it. And the Rambam says, I'll give you a perfect example, Chatzishir. If a person eats less than a Kazayis of Chazir, it's an issue right, it's Chatzishir awesome in a Torah, but you're not Yechayah Malchus. So the Rambam says it's not such a foreign concept, not such a bizarre concept. Something can be awesome in a Torah without carrying with it an onus of Malchus. So what exactly they argue? What's the lum this by this machlokes Tosfos in the Rambam? So if we begin to understand what this machlokes is all about, then we will begin to understand the Magen Mishnah's seemingly arbitrary distinction between essays and los essays. And then if we get this whole piece of the puzzle together, then we'll begin to understand the answer to the Rambad's cash against the Rambam. But this is all setting the stage. This is all the introduction. So the introduction, the introduction, the introduction to try to understand what exactly is the status of eating the human flesh or benefiting from the human flesh. Is it really asbah? No, not really asbah. No, asbah. Not a Jewish goyish. A lot of things are flying around. We haven't had any resolutions yet. But again, we're really learning about Bava Kama. But as you can already tell, this is way out of the realm of Bava Kama. We're into the heart and soul of Maseches Chulin right now. Some real kashrus shailas. But they're going to impact the Rava Kama, because ultimately we have to come back to the original question of Tosfos, why the necessity for the Yad HaPasach? Hopefully, on Friday, we'll try to pick up from this point. Yeah.